In the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Hello and welcome in to this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. You've got little old me, your sometimes humble host, Mark Congleton here. Self-isolating. Somewhere deep beneath the earth in my bunker studio. How are you? I hope your weekend went well. I hope you had a good time. I hope all is good for you and yours. Oh my, a little late getting kicked off there just because I was paying attention to something else and realized, oh my gosh, that's the music. It just hit me. Wait a minute. Is it that time? I got distracted. That's me. Ooh, shiny. It is a Monday. We've had a weekend go by. A lot of things have developed over the weekend. We'll be looking at a handful of them. I've got a list of things to talk about, which I promise I won't complete. But everything I intended to talk about today is in today's show notes. So that will post not long after we finish the show. I've already got it processed and ready. I just decided, you know what? Just post everything that I have. See, I've got all these tabs in my browser open to these different stories. I'm just going to go from one to the next. And if I don't get to all of them, then you get a preview of what I may talk about in part of the show tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see how that works. So how are you? Are you good? Everything all right? I hope you're well. Can I ask you a question? And I'm serious about this, and I would like for you to respond. You can respond either by going to the Facebook page for the podcast. Just look for Daily Perspective, the Daily Perspective podcast. Just look for it on Facebook. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter as well. You can also respond on Twitter. I'll post the question to Twitter if I can remember to in a little while. And you can also email me. You can email mark@dailyperspectivepodcast.com the answer to this question. And the question is, do you know anyone who has COVID-19? Do you know anyone who has COVID-19? And I don't mean like Kathy Griffin. We'll get into her story in a couple of minutes, but I mean, do you know anyone who really has been tested and diagnosed as having COVID-19? I'd like to know. So answer me today, social media or via email. I'd like to hear from you. Just let me know. Others have been asking this question of those who they communicate with on social media and via podcast, and the answers coming back are interesting. I'd like to see how things pan out as far as your life is concerned. Do you know anybody who has COVID-19? Okay. All right. So much for that. Friday, I told you that I had made an attempt on Thursday to get the drone in the air and to shoot some video, and that on Friday, my intent was to do just that. Since my wife, Jane, sweetest woman in the world, was off work, I thought, well, why not just make an adventure of it? Let's get out there and have some fun. And we'll take the drone and go from place to place and get the drone in the air and shoot some video. And we did exactly that. We did exactly that Friday. And if you are watching on Facebook Live, and even if you're not watching the live stream on Facebook Live, you can go to Facebook and look at the Daily Perspective feed on Facebook, and you will see the video of today's live stream. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is. It will be there at some point today. You'll be able to go find it, and you will be able to see this video. And this is what I'm talking about. We went and shot video, aerial video, of local shopping areas. And as I'm watching it go, it's choppy and it's jerky, but you get the impression. It doesn't have to be beautiful. It doesn't have to be cinematic and smooth. It just has to show you. That first one was a Walmart shopping area. The only cars in front of Walmart. The one running right now is a Target shopping area. The only cars you'll find are in front of the Target and the Home Depot. The rest of the shopping area, restaurants, stores, parking lots, completely bare. And then the next one is the big shopping center, the big area in Birmingham, the one where all of the Highline stores are. This is where the Apple store is and a lot of other upper line stores. Look at that parking lot. There's hardly anybody there. The only place that there is anyone is really in front of places serving food. For instance, over to the left there, there's a handful of cars. Those cars are all in front of Johnny Rockets. And there are a few cars on the far end where there are some restaurants located. And that's it. That's all there is. And it's in here. It's I just set it up to loop. It's playing again and again. I'm going to let it play while we talk about this. But this was my curiosity last week. I wanted to have a look. For instance, this Walmart video, that's Walmart there. That's the Walmart Supercenter. All the cars in front of Walmart. And across the highway over there, you see cars in front of Sam's Club, but no place else. Major shopping areas. And this one where the Target and Home Depot, there's a restaurant row out there in front of those stores. No cars to speak of out there either. But on top of the hill behind the Target and the Home Depot, nobody. Nothing. Absolutely empty. It's very apocalyptic. It's very odd. It's very strange. When you're out driving around, and keep in mind, this is on a Friday, okay? This is a weekday, and the highway adjacent to the Summit Shopping Center, where the Apple Store is and all of that I mentioned a while ago, it's playing right now. There's an interstate highway running down one side of it, and then that interstate highway intersects with Highway 280, which runs into Birmingham from that location. That highway is usually bumper to bumper. When we left that location, we took Highway 280 across town and had no issues, except for the construction at our exit where we needed to get off, and they had our exit closed, and we had to go the long way around to get back home again. But this is what it looks like now. And this is going on not only where I live in the Birmingham, Alabama area, but it's going on everywhere. It's going on everywhere. And it's actually scary. It's a pretty scary thing. And to see it happening is frightening. And there are those who are using fear to their advantage. I've discussed that here before. But we won't get into that. In fact, what we'll get into right now is a little bit of absurdity, if we can. Did you hear about Kathy Griffin, the comedian, who checked into the hospital and she lashed out at Donald Trump, screaming at him, so to speak, online on social media about how she couldn't get treated, she couldn't get tested, things were horrible. She's got one of the world's worst cases of Trump derangement syndrome. She and Rob Reiner are pretty close. They're running neck and neck as maybe possibly the worst. And Joy Behar. Oh, they have TDS in a serious way. Well, Kathy Griffin's TDS has manifested itself in a variety of ways over the past few years, most notably her photo shoot. Remember when she made the photo shoot featuring herself holding a bloody severed head of Donald Trump back in 2017? Well, she hasn't learned much from that experience. It damaged her career, but she just keeps on. Last week, she tweeted a photo of herself in the hospital. She criticized President Trump over the availability of coronavirus tests in the United States because she wanted to be tested but wasn't. Here's what the tweet said. I was sent to the COVID-19 isolation ward room in a major hospital ER from a separate urgent care facility after showing unbearably painful symptoms. The hospital couldn't test me for coronavirus because of CDC, parentheses, Pence Task Force, and parentheses, restrictions. She tweeted alongside two photos showing her in a hospital room. So, if you look closely at the two pictures of her in a hospital room, she's wearing a ventilator mask. She's got a mask on. She's got a mask on, not a ventilator mask. But the picture of her face on showing the connection panel behind her on the wall, and I don't know the terminology. Please forgive me if you're in the medical field. But if you notice, on the wall behind her, there are various places to hook things up. Do you notice what's not? Do you notice what's not hooked up? Oxygen. Everybody who's showing coronavirus and has the lung congestion that comes with it, they're getting oxygen. So they don't even suspect she has it. And why was that? Well, here's what really happened. The day after her tweet, she was sent home from the hospital. The day after her tweet. Now, here she is claiming to have coronavirus. She's in pain. It's horrible. It's terrible. Mike Pence and Donald Trump are demons. They're evil from the pits of hell. And they sent her home the day after her tweet, after being diagnosed with an abdominal infection, not the coronavirus. She said she recently returned from a Mexican vacation and experienced intense abdominal pain, vomiting, diarrhea, and a cough. She said she was eventually directed to the emergency room at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles and placed in its coronavirus isolation ward. An X-ray revealed her lungs were clear, and a scan revealed she had an abdominal infection. A doctor still wanted to administer a test for COVID-19, the disease caused by the novel coronavirus, because some of her symptoms fit the illness, according to the comedian. But she said the doctor said she couldn't because of guidelines issued by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So, Kathy, was it worth it? Was it worth using an abdominal infection as a ruse to say you probably had the coronavirus just to attack President Trump? You're looking for a comeback or something. We understand that. But is this really the way to do it? Perhaps she accomplished what she wanted, despite the fact it was clear she had an abdominal infection and not the coronavirus. USA Today wrote a story. They headlined it, "Kathy Griffin, self-isolating after hospital visit, wasn't able to get a coronavirus test." Well, there are a myriad of reasons why the test wasn't available. And Kathy Griffin's story is questionable, given her track record, given what we know that she's already done, and given her Trump derangement syndrome, which has been going insane at incredible levels since Trump was elected. It's very, very difficult to put any kind of trust in her version of the story. So, for her to say the doctor wanted to run a COVID-19 test on her because some of her systems were similar to COVID-19, that's going to be a big no from me, dog. I don't think so. We can't trust Kathy Griffin. We can't depend on anything she says. But there are those who will be just livid that she couldn't get tested because Donald Trump's evil, even though that's probably not the case. You see, Kathy Griffin appeals to a niche of our society. She appeals to a segment of our society who is going to take her word over anyone else's because she is one of their heroes, because she fights for the downtrodden. As she refers to them, her gays. She fights for a segment of society that is a victim group. She is vile. She is nasty. She is basically a horrible human being when it comes down to it. But there are people who love her just because she is a defender of a certain victim group. So they will trust her, and they will believe what she says, and they will share what she says on social media as if it were the gospel truth. And this is the problem we're facing today. So many people around us are getting their news, their information, from social media, and what they're getting isn't the truth. And they're getting it from people like Kathy Griffin. They're getting it from people like Rob Reiner. They're getting it from people who are in the entertainment industry, who are famous, but have no clue about the realities of life, because they get their information from deeply twisted leftist sources who cannot see reality beyond their hate. Their hatred for President Trump is so deep that they can't see the truth. All they can see is their hatred for the man. So you can't trust anything any of these people say. Nothing. So don't. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective. Yeah. As usual, during the breaks, I'm scanning social media just to see what people are saying. You know that meme that circulates from time to time? That's that Tom Hanks as Forrest Gump on the park bench? Captions can be anything, but usually the top line is, "And just like that." And then the bottom line is something else. This one is, "And just like that, Tampa Bay fans no longer think that Tom Brady is a cheater." Oh, man, oh, man. It's the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. Hi there. Good to have you along. Glad you're with me today. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast, being part of the podcast family. Oh, my goodness gracious. Let me get back to what I'm talking about today instead of and off of the social media stuff. Oh, that is just too good. I love that. Well, President Trump had a press conference, a news conference, and a news briefing yesterday. There was some testy standoffs with multiple reporters. And that seems to be a common thread going on. And there are people, there are some who are, you know, people in the news. Well, Brit Hume at one of them, is one of them at Fox News, who carries on about how he wishes Donald Trump wouldn't insult reporters. I don't see him. Well, he does insult reporters. Okay. But at the same time, he also will stop someone and say, "You should be ashamed of the people you work for because of this." And he's usually 100% right in what he says to the reporters about the falsehood of their reporting. For example, not including the entirety of a statement made by him in order to make it look like he said something other than what he actually said. When you look at the entire statement, a good example of this is the "fine people on both sides" story that you've seen circulating for quite some time now. What the general news media has said about that "fine people on both sides" thing, and as a result of their reporting saying what he said, which he didn't say, lots of people on social media just take it for granted that that's what he said, but it wasn't what he said. Not when you have the whole statement. They ignored a great part of what he had to say in order to make it look like he was defending white supremacists and Nazis, people like that, when that's not what he was doing. In fact, he out and out condemned them. But I digress. People from CNN and NPR and other places have been selectively editing what he's had to say, and as a result, misrepresenting him. And as a result, a lot of people in America have a corrupted idea of what he has said and why he has said certain things. Well, speaking at a contentious White House coronavirus news briefing yesterday, that involves some testy standoffs with multiple reporters, President Trump declared that the peak in the death rate in the coronavirus pandemic is likely to hit us in about 2 weeks. He said the federal government will be extending its social distancing guidelines through April 30th. So now we've had another month added on to our social distancing guidelines. Please be aware that what he said, quote, he said this, quote, is likely to hit in 2 weeks. He did not say it would hit in 2 weeks. In the situation he's in, all he can do is give us best guess estimates of what's happening. Based on the information sent to him, given to him by the experts, he has to tell us certain things, and the best guess is that the death rate, the peak in the death rate, is likely to hit in 2 weeks. It may be beyond that, it may be before that, but you have to give a little bit of leeway because this is all fluid. Things are changing. We're working on diagnosis. We're working on breaking things down. We're working on finding solutions. It's all in motion. And it's like hitting a moving target. It's very hard to do, so you deal with what you can. But the people who hate him want to be Greg Brady and play exact words. You remember Greg Brady from the Grady Bunch? Brady Bunch, you remember that episode where he was told not to take the car and he found a way around it because he played exact words? Oh, your exact words were. And he thought he had outsmarted Dad, but he didn't. Well, the press is doing that a lot, and people on social media, liberals on social media, are doing that a lot. They're playing exact words, but in the social media case, they're getting the exact words wrong because the press, in their playing exact words, are not giving you the exact words. Saying his earlier hope that the country could reopen by Easter was just an aspiration. He said, we can expect that by June 1st, we'll be well on our way to recovery and that a lot of great things will be happening. Please, let me just explain to you. When he says it was just an aspiration, I understood it to be that. When I heard him say that, he said, wouldn't that be great? Churches filled, that'd be awesome. He was speaking hopefully. He had hope that this would be that way. I took it that way. I didn't take it as being the gospel truth. I took it as being his hope that things would turn out that way. But they're not turning out that way. Why? As I said, moving target. We're working. You know, it's in the movie Indiana Jones, and with the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the very first Indiana Jones movie. At one point, they've loaded the ark on the truck. It's heading off to be loaded onto a plane, and he tells the two people he's with, here's what we're going to do. One of them asks him, Sala says, Indy, what are you doing? He says, I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along. And this is what we're doing. We are literally making this up as we go along. Well, when asked about worst case economic scenarios, if the country would remain closed indefinitely, the president responded, you're going to have large numbers of suicides, tremendous numbers of suicides. You'll see drugs being used like nobody's ever used them before. And people are going to be dying all over the place. On a positive note, he went on to say two of the country's largest health insurers, Humana and Cigna, have announced that they will waive copays, coinsurance, and deductibles for coronavirus treatments. And that's good news. The bad news is we are already seeing suicides. I've already seen two stories just in the last couple of days about people who, because of the fear being whipped up by the news media and by the irresponsibility we're seeing on social media. Two different people. There was a young lady, and then there's a medical professional in a government in Europe who committed suicide because of the fear of the coronavirus. So we are going to see that. It's already starting to happen. In response to a question at the briefing, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, reiterated his estimate from earlier in the day that it remained possible that 100,000 to 200,000 people could die in the United States. He said, what we're trying to do is not let that happen. And he was calling the extension of social distancing guidelines a wise and prudent decision. Over 2,300 people with the virus have already died in the U.S. He said, when a reporter inquired as to how bad the situation could become, he said, models are good, but models often generate the kind of anxious question you asked. A model is as good as the assumptions you put into the model. And very often, many of these assumptions are based on a complexity of issues that aren't necessarily the same from one country to another. And I would say also, not one state to another and one city to another. Because we're seeing the concentration in New York that we're not seeing in other places. You understand what I'm saying? Fauci said the April 30th extension came after he, Dr. Deborah Birx, and other members of the task force had made the recommendation. So we're looking at the 30th of April, adding another month onto things, and the possibility that we could see 100,000 to 200,000 people die. I think I express the hope of everyone when we hope we don't see that happen. But it could. But we hope it won't. And you should also be aware that that figure is going to be distorted, misquoted, that people on the left are going to take that and twist it every way they can. And they're going to ignore the fact that all of this is constantly changing and in development just because they hate Donald Trump. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's the Monday edition. Good to have you along. And honestly, I mean, it's just, it's wall-to-wall COVID-19, you know? That's pretty much all there is to talk about now. I don't know about you, but we're running out of things to watch on TV. A friend of ours posted over the weekend, okay, I finished Netflix, what's next? Isn't that about how it is? We watched, what was it we watched the other night? We watched the finale of Picard on CBS All Access. And I actually paid for the subscription just to be able to watch Picard. Because I'm a long-term Star Trek fan. I have been since I was a little kid. I mean, when I was a little kid and it came on, we had to watch it every week. And it's been that way. It's just been part of life. It's been part of life for a lot of people for as long as they've been alive. There's a generation of people who grew up and there was always a Star Trek. And so I wanted to see the series Picard, which had some really compelling episodes. Can I just do a mini review here? Okay. Let me warn you, spoilers will be coming here. If you have not seen the final episode, you might want to skip ahead a little bit because I'm going to spoil some things for you. There have been some compelling episodes. There have been some very thoughtful episodes. The special effects, in a way, it's been good. It's been very good. In another way, it's been disappointing. And in the finale, on one hand, I came away satisfied. On the other hand, I came away disappointed because I thought it was predictable, very predictable. And that they leaned on what some have described as what looked like computer game graphics. I didn't think it was that bad, but I knew that Picard couldn't die. You know, if you've been following the series, he has a brain issue. He is dying. He's made it an issue. He told everybody in one episode, I'm dying. And explained everything to them and then said, and I will not listen. We will not talk about this again. As kind of as an order. We will not discuss this again. And and in the show, he's 93 or 94 years old. I think he's 94. And he's doing really well. It's the future, after all, you know, and we're all going to live a long time in the future. So he's doing really well, and all things considered. But he actually, as a result of the stress and the strain, he actually does die. And I thought, oh, well, they'll just, yeah, that's easy. Because they've already laid out everything for how they're going to fix the situation. And sure enough, they did exactly what I thought they were going to do. But I came away nodding my head and at the same time a bit disappointed because it didn't wrap up the way I thought it would. It should have. I thought they took some cheesy chances. The evil, horrible aliens that were supposed to destroy all of mankind coming through this portal to another dimension, so to speak. I mean, I actually felt more threatened by the movie Ghostbusters than I did by this. I kept looking at this thing that was coming through this opening that had been created, and I thought, that's it? That's it? There was one of the Avengers movies where the evil creatures came from way out beyond that was a whole lot more intimidating and frightening than this. This is what we're supposed to be scared of? Anyway. So, but that was it. And that's all I have to say about that. We have our own little horror movie to talk about here, and that is COVID-19. And as long as we're talking about COVID-19... Please don't stand so close to me. I really would prefer that you not do that. Please back away, at least 6 feet. Okay, social distancing, please. Well, Governor Gina Raimondo has a message for any New Yorkers who want to come to visit her state of Rhode Island. Don't. She's called out the National Guard to go door to door to find anybody from New York City who has come to the state in recent weeks. She said at a news conference on Friday, right now we have a pinpointed task. That risk is called New York City. The state police in Rhode Island have begun pulling over cars with New York plates. Raimondo says anyone from New York City found to have recently come into the state will be automatically quarantined for 14 days. Rhode Island, which had some 162 confirmed cases late Friday, compared to New York State's total of more than 44,000, joined a host of other municipalities and states trying to bar entry to New Yorkers living in the epicenter of the U.S.'s coronavirus outbreak. The Hamptons, counties north of the city, and governors in Florida, Maryland, Texas, and South Carolina have all also ordered New Yorkers to keep out or undergo mandatory 2-week quarantines. Governor Cuomo said he was opposed to such restrictions, at least within the state, saying, "I don't like it socially or culturally." He said this during a radio appearance Friday. "I don't like what it says about us as one state, one family. Also, I don't believe it's medically justified." Not medically justified? Hey, Governor, there are 44,000 people in your larger city who have tested positive for the virus. The only thing in this situation that might not be medically justified is building a wall surrounding the Big Apple and turning it into one big hospital ward, or perhaps some kind of escape from New York prison. Raimondo acknowledged her policy is extreme. She said, "I know it's unusual, I know it's extreme, and I know some people disagree with it. If you want to seek refuge in Rhode Island, you must be quarantined." Not exactly what the founders had in mind when they created a federal republic. But what does the ACLU have to say about this? According to Fox News, Stephen Brown, the executive director of the ACLU of Rhode Island, said in a statement, "While the governor may have the power to suspend some state laws and regulations to address this medical emergency, she cannot suspend the Constitution. Under the Fourth Amendment, having a New York State license plate simply does not and cannot constitute probable cause to allow police to stop a car and interrogate the driver, no matter how laudable the goal of the stop may be." Once again, all together now and with feeling, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. One more time, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. While the ACLU's reaction is predictable, it obscures a larger issue. New York is being gradually isolated and its citizens are being forced to wear the mark of Cain. In the long run, this probably isn't a good idea, but for the short term, perhaps New York could help out a little and urge residents not to travel out of state. You won't be much safer anyway, and the rest of us would breathe a sigh of relief knowing you're at home. Honestly, what happens in New York should stay in New York. Now, Cuomo has threatened to sue Rhode Island. He wants to go to war with the state of Rhode Island over its actions in sending the National Guard after visiting New Yorkers to make sure they self-quarantine for 14 days. He's threatening to sue the state for its new policy of targeting visiting New Yorkers by using law enforcement to ensure they self-quarantine. The governor's a little miffed. He believes Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo's actions in calling out the National Guard and setting up checkpoints on highways is absurd. Quote, "I understand the goal, but there's a point of absurdity. And I think what Rhode Island did is at that point of absurdity. We have to keep the ideas and the policies we implement positive rather than reactionary and emotional." So what's more important, being positive or staying alive? Gee, let's think about that. Cuomo added he believes the two governors could work it out. Raimondo said the policies were intended to make sure people from New York would self-quarantine for 14 days upon arrival in Rhode Island. She says, "I want to be crystal clear about this. If you're coming to Rhode Island from New York, you are ordered into quarantine. The reason for that is because more than half of the cases of coronavirus in America are in New York." Raimondo isn't kidding around. She's using law enforcement to drive the point home, both the Rhode Islanders and New Yorkers. State police reportedly set up a checkpoint on Interstate 95 in Hope Valley Friday, where drivers with New York license plates had to stop and provide contact information. They were told to self-quarantine for 2 weeks. New Yorkers who failed to comply could face fines and jail time, according to Raimondo, although she added it wasn't the goal of her policy. Cuomo told CNN, "I think what they did is wrong. It was reactionary. I think it was illegal, but we'll work it out amicably, I'm sure. No state should be using police to prohibit interstate travel in any way." Cuomo didn't say on what grounds he would sue Rhode Island, although the Commerce Clause is probably going to come into play. But you can see Governor Raimondo's frustration. Thousands of typhoid Marys, they're coming into their state, into that state, and they're refusing to follow the 14-day quarantine rule. Meanwhile, her citizens are getting sick, and Cuomo is apparently saying it's better to appear positive than reactionary. These are unprecedented times, calling for unprecedented measures. We can debate the constitutional niceties later. That's according to Rick Moran over at PJ Media. Well, I think I completely understand, and I think the people of Florida would also completely understand, because Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida issued a controversial executive order. It's being labeled a stay-away order aimed at those planning to travel from New York to Florida during the coronavirus outbreak. In an appearance on Fox News, criminal defense attorney Brian Claypool advised that a preliminary injunction could prevent Governor Santis from enforcing this order. Claypool believes that the request will be granted because the executive order is unconstitutional and Florida will have to deploy a different strategy to protect their state. The governor has mandated that those arriving to Florida from New York, they got to self-quarantine for 14 days. It's very similar to the Rhode Island situation. So, the governors of states around the nation, I should say, thinking governors, rational governors, understand that half of the infected people in the country are in New York. And this shelter-in-place order, in order for it to be effective, has to be enacted by everyone. So they don't want infected people coming from infected places and infecting their places. Doesn't that just seem like common sense to you? Hello. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. There is good news right around the corner. And it's interesting. I made a mistake. Can I just have a little confession right here? I made a really stupid mistake yesterday. A friend of mine on social media. And I think Russ listens to this podcast. Hi, Russ. He's very, very talented when it comes to dealing with trolls in social media. And he had responded to something on social media that some uninformed leftist bird brain had posted. Those are my words, not his. And he's being very kind. He's being very straightforward. He's being very factual. He's being very patient with people. And I have to admit, I'm none of those things. I just am not. And I have to force myself to step away. And I generally, the vast majority of the time, quite honestly, just don't engage with people on social media about things like this or political things, really, because I'm not interested in having a debate. I'm just not. Because when I see your opinion and I recognize that your opinion is based in error, in falsehoods, in assumptions, in disinformation being propagated by people who have a vested interest in harming someone, then and you're willing to believe that information, I'm not going to argue with you. Your mind is made up. You can't be convinced by the truth. The facts don't matter to you. Your mind is made up. So I'm not going to waste my time on you. Russ does. And he obviously enjoys it. And good for him. Well, I made the mistake of getting into one of those conversations. I just made a comment below one of his. And the next thing I know, I've got liberals using really foul language and making insinuations. And I try to be kind, and I just can't be kind because people are idiots. You know, I my solution to the situation is not to go low. I just won't go low. I just state the facts as I see them, and when they disagree with me, I ignore them. Because it's clear to me at that point, their minds are made up. It doesn't matter to them what the truth actually is. They have locked into something, and they won't let go of it. And this was about using hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pax, things like that, as a treatment for COVID-19. We've been seeing around the world, we've been seeing in place after place after place where it's been tried, it's successful. In New York, one doctor has treated 699 patients successfully. All of them successfully. All of them recovered using these drugs. And they're still saying, well, you know, they haven't approved it, so this is stupid. Trump's wrong. It's all Trump's fault. Trump evil. Orange man bad. And that's what you're dealing with. Well, townhall.com has an article by Kevin McCullough. Title is Hydrochloroquine. Help is on the way. Over the past couple of days, I've lost a literal count of how many people have written to me asking about the clinical trials in New York State regarding the use of hydroxychloroquine. The trials began last Tuesday. In this column space and much more liberally on my Twitter feed, I have attempted to stay up to date on the rapidly developing reports of the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine. I've also dedicated a considerable percentage of my radio show over the past 2 weeks highlighting these developments. It's strange that I should need to. Before the drug was mentioned by President Trump, there had been a robust interest in looking at the replicated results from China, India, South Korea, and France. Sadly, American medical authorities didn't really give any credence to the claims until the controlled study in southern France, which returned a 1 in 10,000 chance that the results were anecdotal or in any way not possible to replicate repeatedly. Dr. Fauci dragged his feet, even as that study was becoming public. Then the president mentioned it, and all of a sudden it became a political issue. It should not be. The willingness by anyone of either political party to weaponize an actual solution or series of solutions to COVID-19 is utterly inhuman. And as the good news is coming out in, there is a greater reason for hope. Here are just a handful of new developments from the last few days and hours. One, Dr. Fauci, when asked if he would use hydroxychloroquine, the cocktail of hydroxychloroquine, answered with resounding affirmation. Simply because he had asked for better clinical evidence previously did not mean he was unaware of what the data was already showing. France reversed its previous ban on the drug when the highly esteemed Dr. Didier Raoult released his first survey's findings. The French medical authorities were resistant as he released an even larger study with even more patients and improved results from his initial study. The French public health officials had no choice but to give guidance as to its use. India's public health guidance, this is point number three, India's public health guidance granted affirmation for physicians and frontline medical workers to begin taking it as a preventative. This use was the very suggestion I recommended as first steps in this column weeks ago. Since our own CDC has cited its prophylactic benefits, our doctors and frontline medical personnel should be taking it now. In fact, they are. If I can make an aside here, they are. Because I've seen people interviewed on news programs who are saying that they are taking this as a preventative. That's why they're not getting sick. Given the increased acceptance here in the States, not one, but as many as seven different pharmaceutical companies have agreed to mass produce as much as 250 million doses by mid-April. That's in the next 2 weeks. Given Dr. Raoult's guidance in both of his studies, this would give the globe enough inventory to cure 46 million cases. Presently, we have not hit 1 million cases yet worldwide. Notably, Bayer, Novartis, and Teva Pharm stepped up, pledging to donate several million doses right out of the chute. And point number five, doctors began prescribing off-label use, and in doing so, are replicating the clinical results in remarkable fashion. One doctor in Monroe, New York, as I mentioned earlier, has treated in excess of 700 patients now. As of this writing, he's lost zero patients to death, zero to intubation, and only two to hospitalization. Another doctor in New York City has treated in excess of 100 patients with zero deaths. You can expect to see some clinical findings begin to trickle in today through the end of this coming week. The clinical results showed the patient going from symptomatic to negative testing on average in 5 to 6 days. Tuesday will mark 1 week since the trials began. So watch the recovery numbers in New York closely, as there may be a bit of a pop. The Democrats, the media, the people who despise the president, don't want these trials to succeed. Three Democrat governors have gone so far as to ban the use of the drug cocktail. And one has even threatened action against doctors who prescribe it. Which is an odd juxtaposition for the days we live in. It appears that the president cares more about their constituents in their states than their own governors do. Bottom line, results will begin to filter back. The global medical focus is back on what the drugs can actually do as opposed to who is promoting them. Use of them in the USA is already demonstrating life-saving results, and it appears there will be no inventory problem in prescribing them due to the generosity, not greed, the generosity of Big Pharma. So we have companies who are going to produce enough to cure 46 million cases in the next 2 weeks. We're seeing real results coming back. Things are happening. And yet, Democrat governors, politicians, and the progressive press don't want the president to have a win, so they're not going to give him credit. You can trust me on this one. If you watch as this develops, as we start seeing results, they will begin to say that Trump should have acted sooner. And I want you to remember when that happens that he was the one who suggested we give it a try. And that's when things started clicking. They don't want him to have a win on this. They don't want him to have a success. They don't want this to be something that he succeeded at. They won't let that happen. Because him being right about anything puts more trust by the people in his leadership. And they can't have that. And that is the sick, twisted, and demented truth about the progressives and what their agenda is. And their agenda is to win at all costs. And winning at all costs means people die. Winning at all costs means that the president can't succeed. And if he doesn't succeed, that means people you know, possibly loved ones, may die. Just because politicians can't let this president win. And that brings me back to my question from earlier. Do you know anyone who has the coronavirus? Let me know. I told you how at the top of the show. Let me know today. And we'll get back together again tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of The Daily Perspective. God bless you. Have a great day. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.